Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. After I give everything I've got to land a perfect vocal, I usually take five before jumping into the next track. And I've learned exactly how to recharge in that time. Some folks grab coffee. I hit a quick good luck spin. Next thing you know, the break is just as fun as laying down the track. A better break makes for a better take. Need a break? Less chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Heroes get remembered.
Here's the windup.
Legends never die.
Fastball hit deep to right. This could be it. Way back there. Oh,
welcome to Hardball.
Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
Major League Baseball's history in first person. Conversations that span almost 20 years.
It is 9:46 p.m.
with the men who saw and made that history.
Sandy into his windup. Here's the pitch.
Many of whom are no longer with us.
Swung on and missed a perfect game.
Stories from the 1930s. To the 21st century.
That ball is going to be out of here. It's gone. It's 7:15. There's a new home run champion of all time, and it's Henry Aaron.
This is Hardball.
Dad, you want to have a catch?
Welcome into Hardball. My name is Chris D'Amino, and this is episode 13 as we continue our trip through baseball's history, one conversation and many stories at a time. Thanks for finding us, and I hope both you and your families are safe and well during all of what is going on in the world today. I hope this episode and others here help fill some of your day with good thoughts, thoughts of not only the game, but of what is to come on fields everywhere sooner instead of later. I want to thank Keith Ippolito, the man who works both the opening and close of these, and I love our texts and phone calls that come after we discover that a player, of course, had a song written about him, by none other than Jerry Jeff Walker in this case, and the highlights that need to be included to round out this podcast. So thanks again, Keith. If you are new to Hardball, the goal was never to offer up Q&As, interviews, depositions with these men. It was to find some of the best to ever play the game and talk to them about their personal trip from somewhere USA, or in some cases from other countries, to that first day in a major league uniform and stadium. The people they played with, against, and the games and moments they were involved with. These are conversations that, when done well, there is no phone line separating me, our guest, and most importantly, you. Today we're going to travel to Texas, a first ballot Hall of Famer who threw up some numbers that will never, ever be touched. Lynn Nolan Ryan Jr. was Texas-born, Texas-bred, and well, you know the rest. And if you don't think where he is from didn't make him in large part who he is, you don't understand how he was raised and who he is to this day. If you don't believe that working a paper route between 1 and 4 a.m. with his father from the ages of 8 to 18 doesn't mature you and create a quiet drive and personal responsibility, just wake up and walk around your neighborhood at those hours for a week and see if you want to do it for a second. How Texas is Nolan Ryan? There are not one, not two, but three different statues of the man throughout the state. They do it big, and they hold proud to their own. So where does Nolan Ryan fall in the conversation of how great was he, and how does his greatness compare to the best to ever play? What boxes does he check? Well, he's got the nickname, the Ryan Express. Perfect, in that a movie from the mid-1960s, Von Ryan's Express, played right into the way he pitched. A wild ride for sure. Check the movie out and watch some highlights of Nolan. Records? He just doesn't hold them. He owns them. When it comes to records, most sports names and numbers need to be written in pencil. Nolan Ryan's name is etched in stone when it comes to some of his. The fight for all time. strikeouts, 5,714. All-time walks, 2,795. Seasons played, 27. No-hitters, 7. One-hitters, 12. Two-hitters, 18. And three-hitters, 31. Wild pitches, 277. 50 more than knuckleballer Phil Niekro. 11 strikeout titles, 4 of them after his 40th birthday, and 383 in a season will be standing after every stadium we know today crumbles. 24 seasons of 100-plus innings pitched, and a couple of handfuls more. Every one of those fights is for second place. Rhinitis, the sudden I don't feel good, I think I'll take the night off disease was a real thing. And please remember this. He accumulated these numbers in an era when guys didn't strike out 100 times. That season he struck out 383, 1973, 10 American League hitters struck out 100 times. That number's over 100 now. The argument against Nolan Ryan as an all-time all-timer, well, he never won a Cy Young Award. He finished second once, and that's it. Only 7 postseason starts, 1 World Series game appearance. I will counter with this. His number has been retired by 3 different teams. He owns the distinction of being the New York Mets' worst trade in franchise history, this side of Tom Seaver, because that one was much more sentimental on top of everything else, including abilities. When fan voting for the All-Century team was a public referendum on your thoughts on players and their all-time place in the game's history, Nolan Ryan got more votes than any pitcher. And while it was a popularity contest every bit as much as a scientific poll, it does mean something. Here's my summary of the man's time on the mound. Nolan Ryan was no drugstore cowboy. He's the real thing. And while I don't believe he is the greatest pitcher of all time, his career and time spent 60 feet and 6 inches away from the 1,417 different hitters he faced was truly the most fascinating. Here you go. Lynn Nolan Ryan Jr.
It takes a madman to run this gauntlet of death. It takes guts and glory, arrogance and fury. It takes the man they call Von Ryan.
Well, our story starts in Texas.
It's always fun to talk with a legend. Nolan Ryan is a legend, and I had a lot of battles with him. I actually faced him 91 times, and he struck me out 13 times, okay? He walked me 19 times. He was scared of me.
Here it is. He strikes him out. Second time Blackwell has struck out, and that's the fourth strikeout of the afternoon for Ryan, and he has tied the all-time strikeout mark in the major leagues. Number 3,508.
The one story I remember about Nolan was the night before the strike in 1981. I was sitting on a National League record, Stan Musial's record, and I got a hit off him the first time up. And the next 3 times, he struck me out, and I didn't even swing at a pitch. And he just took his belt buckle and said, "You're not going to break that record off me." And I had to wait 56 days to break the record.
The 1-2 pitch strike, 3 called on Mills, and there's the record breaker. So Ryan strikes out Tim Blackwell to catch Walter Johnson, and he strikes out Brad Mills to own that record all by himself. 3,509 strikeouts for Nolan Ryan.
Tonight, joining me on Hardball, Living Air Classic Legends of the Game, a gentleman as we make our pursuit to speak to every living Hall of Famer, Nolan Ryan. We go from 4 to 3 after speaking to him tonight when the Texas Rangers in town. Very fortunate to catch up with him tonight as he spends some time in Texas itself. Mr. Ryan, how you doing this evening?
Everything's good.
Well, I appreciate your time. I know you don't do a lot of these, and very much appreciated, I'm sure, from the baseball fans around the Atlanta area.
We're glad to do it. There's awfully good fans in Atlanta.
Yeah, and obviously your career. You know, we try to avoid the most obvious things and really just going to look back a little bit as how you got started and some of the people you perhaps played with and some of the signature moments. But I find it most interesting, you're the youngest of 6. One of the stories I read is, were you about 7 years old when you got that first baseball glove?
Well, I have a brother that's 7 years older than I am, and so because of his interest in sports, I was able to tag along with him and his friends, and that's where I developed my interest in baseball and other sports, and I was on my first organized team at 7.
In the Texas area, how did you actually follow the major leagues, or what was actually the way that you got information about what was going on around the majors?
Well, in those days, Houston was a Triple A, had a Triple A ball club, which were the Houston Bus, which was the St. Louis Cardinals Triple A farm club. So we were able to pick them up on the radio, the Cardinals, with their 50,000 watt station. And then the only other thing was the game of the week on Saturdays, and that was your only exposure to Major League Baseball.
Were you a fan as a young man growing up, and what team did you actually find yourself rooting for,
well,
or gravitating towards?
I think. I think I probably saw more of the Yankees on television, and so I think because of that, I was probably more familiar with the Yankees, but I think because of the World Series, we always, that was a very big event to watch that, or and listen to it on the radio, that I became a Braves fan when they were in Milwaukee, and probably knew and followed the Braves probably more so than I did the Yankees as far as liking them.
And we'll talk about that first game. You actually pitched your first time in the major leagues against the Atlanta version of the Braves, correct?
Correct.
And we'll talk about that lineup in a few minutes. But one of the other things I find interesting, when you have the arm you have, I guess a gentleman by the name of Red Murph was the guy who scouted you first and foremost?
That's correct. He saw me as a sophomore in high school and followed me. Probably didn't miss, he or his bird dog scout didn't miss, but maybe 10% of the games I fished after that once he saw me as a sophomore in high school.
How many other scouts actually came around besides Red Murph?
Well, my senior year, there were a lot of scouts that came through, but a lot of them didn't really like me because I was 6'2 and weighed 150, and they just thought physically I wouldn't hold up.
What kind of arm are we talking about back in high school? I mean, I know there's no, I guess your high school coach may comment, we didn't really have a radar gun, and he didn't know how hard you threw till he went to a game in the Astrodome and saw Larry Durker throw. He's on record as saying, well, heck, I think Nolan throws just as hard as that guy, if not harder.
Well, you know, everybody asked me about how hard did I throw, and I always tell them, well, I was pre-radar guns, and so, you know, it's hard to say. Red Murphy had seen me pitched as a sophomore, and he told our high school coach that he'd been to the Astros game and saw Jim Maloney and Turk Farrell face each other, who were two hard throwers, and he said Nolan throws as hard as they do, if not harder. And so, you know, I found that pretty hard to believe being at that age, but he was convinced that I had a major league arm, and he followed me very closely.
Now, when you throw as hard as you do and you have, again, some control issues, there are some stories, and I don't know what's fact and fiction, but was it true? Did high school players, was there ever really a moment when a high school player refused to bat against you, or is that one of those stories?
What happened, we were in a the final game of our district, and whoever won that game was going to go into the state playoffs, and the first guy up, I hit him in the helmet and split his helmet, and the second guy hit him in the arm, broke his arm, and the third hitter up, that's when the coaches would, your coach would coach third base, and he went down and asked coach not to hit, and that is true. I was very wild, and we played night games under bad lights, and so I don't blame them for not wanting to hit.
Now, how much of an advantage is that for you as a pitcher at that moment?
Well, I think it's an advantage if you can get the ball over, because at that point in time, those guys don't want to hit, and so they're going to give you as much of the plate as they can, and that pretty much takes their aggressiveness away.
Now, how did you last until the eighth round of that draft? I'm blown away that more people, at least, you mentioned your size, but when I see an arm like that, how is it that you actually last that long?
Well, I think, you know, obviously it was before guns, so they were just strictly doing it off visual.
Mm-hmm.
We were a 3A school, which was a fairly small school in Texas, and I think that the scouts looked at me and they just saw such a rough talent, and they probably felt like, well, physically ain't gonna hold up. He's got a great arm, but he's so far from being a major league pitcher that they probably didn't project me to ever get to the big leagues.
Now, going in the eighth round, I understand you actually make some at least alternative plans in case this baseball thing doesn't work out.
Well, you know, I asked for the college package and stuff like that because, you know, I had no idea either whether I was major league material or not, and if I had any chance of getting to the big leagues. I was so far removed from that, so I felt like, you know, if baseball doesn't work out, then I need to be able to fall back on something and have life after baseball.
One of the other things I find interesting is I've talked to so many gentlemen from your era and even before, that idea of, okay, now it's time to sign that first professional contract, a lot of times it's done at the kitchen table. Was that the scenario and scene when you actually made that decision to sign?
Well, because in that period of our society, you know, where we sat down at dinner time at, around the kitchen table, in most households, you didn't have formal dining rooms in Alvin, Texas, and so everything was discussed and done at the kitchen table, and this was no different.
What did your dad think about this whole opportunity?
Well, I think that he probably thought it was a an opportunity for me that very seldom do a kid get an opportunity of that nature, and I was the last of six children, and I had two sisters in college, and I think my parents were in a position that even on a baseball scholarship that I that financially they weren't going to be able to afford three kids in college at one time.
And may I ask, sir, what did it actually cost the New York Mets to get Nolan Ryan to become their property?
The incentive package that they gave me, and with the college money in there, it was around $20,000.
And in Alvin, Texas, what is $20,000 actually in the mid-60s?
Well, that was in that time and era, the average salary on a monthly basis was probably $500-$600. Mm-hmm. So $20,000 was quite a bit of money, and mainly for somebody with a high school education and getting a bonus of that nature.
Now, I don't want to infer too much, but is it my understanding that you actually delivered newspapers with your dad? And we're not talking about one of those let's ride a bike and throw newspapers on the porch type routes, are we?
Right. What we were, we had a distributorship of the Houston Post in our community, and we threw 1,500 papers every night, and they came at 1 o'clock in the morning. So every morning we were up and met the truck, and the papers came in, and we rolled and threw the papers, and would on weeknights get to bed around 4, back to bed around 4, 4:30, and on Sunday mornings, because of the Sunday paper, we probably wouldn't get back to bed till 5:30 or 6.
Fair to say that a work ethic is created pretty early in the Ryan household?
Well, that's what we knew was work, and obviously that the influence my parents had on me, and I think my four sisters and brother, was that, you know, that was just part of life. We all had jobs and we worked, and we understood that to be successful, you had to work and apply your trade. And so I think that that was instilled in me at an early age by my parents.
Was there ever a moment when you just looked at that clock and said, not today, Dad? What would have happened if you would have actually tried that?
No, that, you know, that never was even considered or was an issue, because, you know, I think that it was also instilled is that we were responsible for that, and people relied on us to deliver that paper, and that that was just what we accepted. And so, you know, I can't ever even think about thinking that, you know, we just sleep in and don't do it today.
Now, you go to the minor leagues. Obviously, your nocturnal habits might be a little bit different than some of the guys that are playing minor league ball with you, but you're not in the minor leagues all that long. We mentioned in 66, you come up and you actually have your first appearance in the big leagues against the Atlanta Braves.
Well, that's correct. My I signed towards the middle to the end of June in 65 and played basically 2.5 months in rookie ball. And then my first full season was 66 and went to Greenville, South Carolina, and pitched there. And the season was over at the end of August, and then got called to the big leagues and faced the Atlanta Braves in relief my first time out, and then started game, and then I left the ball club to enter Alvin Community College, and mm-hmm. I tried to go home in the off season and get as much education as I could.
You're 1 or 1.5 years removed, I guess, from high school when you make that appearance against the Braves. How surreal is it for a young man from Alvin, Texas, to be standing facing Henry Aaron and Eddie Matthews and anybody else you were going to face in that lineup?
Well, I can still remember coming in the bullpen at Shea Stadium to face the Atlanta Braves and facing Eddie Matthews and Henry Aaron and Alou and Cardi and Joe Torre was on that team. And so I can remember not being that far removed and having their baseball cards, so it was quite intimidating, and being in A-ball and then coming from A-ball to there and having no idea if I had what it took to get those guys out or not. So needless to say, I was pretty scared about the whole situation, and and pretty much intimidated, not knowing how to pitch them. And so I went out there and just threw the way I knew how to throw. The first major league home run I ever gave up was to Joe Torre.
Well, that's not bad. If you're going to give one up, you might as well give one up to a pretty good player. Now, the Mets were not a very good team, and everybody knows what happened in 1969, but they did have a lot of good young pitching, and there's a blessing, but there's also a curse in that. Is there not when you first get up?
Well, what we had was that we were a very talented organization of young, good arms, and because of that, it was very competitive with the arms that they had. And one of the problems that I had was that I was rushed to the big leagues and really didn't have the type of control and command that I really needed to pitch in the big leagues. And then I had I was in a top priority reserve unit, and so I flew home to Houston every other weekend during the season to make my military obligation. And because of that, I never pitched on a regular basis. So the 4 years I was with the Mets, I never really did develop any consistency.
What would have happened, do you think, if you stayed in New York? And everybody talks about Nolan Ryan for Jim Fregosi and what that trade really meant, certainly for California. But do you think you would have become anywhere near the pitcher you became if you had stayed in New York much longer than that?
Well, you know, it's hard to say because after the 69 season and the World Championship, the Mets were trying to duplicate that and get back in the World Series. And they did that again in 73, but they didn't really have the luxury of letting me pitch a lot of innings and with my control problems. And so when they traded me to the Angels, what it enabled me to do was get in a four-man rotation with the Angels, start pitching about 300 innings a year. And also the pitching coach out there was Tom Morgan, and Tom truly helped me with my delivery, and I think Tom was the key. In those years that I was with the Angels, I really call my foundation years as far as my career is concerned.
I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, everybody. It's Andy and James here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do fun facts.
Yes, we do. James, give me a fact.
Did you know that there is an extinct bandicoot whose official scientific name is Crash Bandicoot?
Lovely. I didn't know that. Did you know, James, that Upper Egypt is technically below Lower Egypt?
Incredible. Absolutely amazing. I would love to hear more about that.
Well, all you have to do is go and listen to No Such Thing as a Fish.
Where will I find it?
Oh, like, all over.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Do you know a gentleman by the name, or have you ever heard the name Lloyd Gearhart?
That doesn't ring a bell.
This is the story that he tells. He was a scout for the Mets, and he was scouting the American League teams. And somebody asked him about Fregosi, and he came back and he sent in a report saying, you know, I know he's winding down in his career, but he looks like he could probably help us. He goes, and of course they make the trade. They trade you for basically Jim Fregosi. A few years later, he's no longer working for the Mets, and the story, as he tells it, is he goes back to New York, and everybody's looking at him funny. And he finally says, hey, what's going on? And they said, well, why would you actually tell the Mets to trade Nolan Ryan for Jim Fregosi? And he said, I didn't tell the Mets to do that. So the story that he told was somebody had to take the hit for that trade, and he was going to be the one. But he didn't find out till a few years later that he actually was getting blamed for that one.
Huh. Well, I certainly understood their thinking behind that. They were wanting a third baseman, and they took Jim Fregosi, who'd been an all-star shortstop, mm-hmm. thinking that they could move him to third and that he was an offensive player and would still have plenty of range to play third, and he still had enough arm to play third. So I can understand their thinking that they had a gap there and they were trying to fill it. And the one thing they felt like their organization was blessed with was a lot of good arms. So I think they felt like that they could make that trade and it probably wouldn't hurt them.
Now, the Ryan Express, Von Ryan's Express, a movie with Frank Sinatra, was that out at the time, and is that how you got...
That's how I was tagged, the Ryan Express, was because of that movie when it came out, and one of the New York writers tagged me with that.
Now, what about Gil Hodges? You know, you talked about your control problems. He let you pitch in relief in that 69 series, and was it Paul Blair that you got on an 0-2 pitch?
Right, and I can tell you he brought me in against Atlanta with Rico Carty up with guys on first and third in the third inning to face Rico, and I think we were down 3-2 at the time or something. And why he did that, I don't know. I guess it was a hunch that if I was on, then, you know, that I might be successful. And then he did the same thing again against Baltimore.
And it worked out.
Yeah, I did.
Now, a couple. When you throw seven no-hitters, I know it's cheap and easy to talk about the no-hitters and certainly the numbers, 53 major league records. I know all of that stuff because you do a little reading, and certainly as you follow your career, that stuff jumps out at you. But I'm more curious as to your teammates' reaction. I know the whole gospel is don't bother the guy. Let him sit by himself. Nobody talk to the guy. But depending upon a pitcher's personality, I've had pitchers tell me I was begging people in the seventh inning to just look at me, say something to me. What was your personality in the middle of all of that?
Well, my personality is I kind of get into my start and what I'm doing, who I'm going to face in the next inning. And so I'm not one that converses a lot during the game with my teammates. So and I don't pay a lot of attention to superstitions. So, you know, I didn't really pay attention to that. And I think after throwing the first couple of no-hitters and getting into the late innings and losing them, I never really felt like or even thought too much about a no-hitter until I got into the seventh, because I knew the last nine outs were going to be the toughest outs for me.
And maybe it's just me, but I would assume you were probably the calmest guy on the field when all of that was going on in that seventh, eighth, and ninth inning, because maybe it's some guys who hadn't been in the middle of that. You were in the middle of so many. Might it be a fair statement that some of your teammates were a little bit more nervous than you were?
Well, I think that a lot of times your infield probably starts feeling that because they don't want to make an error or they want to make sure a ball doesn't get through. And I can remember in the sixth no-hitter against Oakland, Ricky Henderson came up with one out in the ninth, and he topped a curveball towards short. And Jeff Husson was our shortstop, and he had to come in on a run, and he made a really great play where he fielded the ball and threw it underhand to beat Ricky, who was still very fast at the time. And I can remember him hollering, and just to see the emotion and the smile on his face that he made that play, because he knew it was a big time play. And mm-hmm. And I can to this day still remember that. And when I think back on those games, obviously that's one of the plays that stands out. One thing about all the no-hitters, I can remember plays that were made in no-hitters that gave me an opportunity to throw a no-hitter. And a lot of times you had no-hit stuff, but the difference between a no-hitter and maybe a one- or two-hitter is that a ball's hit where a play can't be made, and it may not necessarily have been hit hard.
Now, you mentioned no-hit stuff. Obviously, when you go to the mound, one of the good things when you're – not having great control, infielders and outfielders get a little bit fidgety. When you get that under control, when you find out that, hey, maybe it's in California, I can throw strikes and I can get people out and I can even toy with them a little bit, I'd imagine the guys behind you understand that not only can something special happen tonight every time you take the mound, but it's the idea of being on your toes because you're going to be around the plate and you're going to give them a chance to not be wandering mindlessly in their heads.
Well, fielders are going to respond to the type of game their pitchers are pitching. And if they're standing out there and a guy's 3-1, 3-2, 2-0 on hitters, they're all, you know, practically every hitter, those guys are standing around an awful lot. And it's hard for them to keep their concentration, their intensity. So when a pitcher is around the plate and they know things are happening, and then I think it helps the fielders to concentrate and to have that intensity level that they need.
I also have to ask a couple of true falses. Norm Cash, people have told me, I wish there was a photo, the at-bat. If I just mention Norm Cash, what's the first thing that's supposed to come to mind?
Well, naturally, it'd be being the last out of the second no-hitter and coming to the plate with the table leg.
Now, are there any photos of that?
Well, you know, I've never seen one. I don't know that the photographers knew what was going on until the umpire made him throw it out.
Now, you mentioned you're into your game and it's a little bit stoic, but did you even crack a smile at that moment?
Well, you know, I knew Norm and I knew the character that he was, and I was a Norm Cash fan, so I also knew that he was a tough out, but I knew the lighter side of him, but no, because that was my second no-hitter, and it, you know, is against a very tough, predominant left-handed hitting lineup, so I probably don't think that I found that real funny at the time.
Now, what about Pete Rose? The night that he ties the National League hits record, you decided, or it certainly seemed you made a conscious choice not to give him a chance to break that against you.
Well, you know, Pete, when I think of Pete Rose, I think of Pete as the ultimate competitor, and he was hard for me to strike out. He was such a battler. He'd do anything he could to put the ball in play, and so after he tied Stan Musial's National League hit record and I struck him out the next three times, I don't think I ever did that before, and I never did it afterwards. And he was a good breaking ball hitter, and then for him to strike out the last time on three straight curveballs, that was a very, on a personal basis, a very special evening for me. And then to watch Pete, out of frustration, beating his bat on the ground, going to the dugout and breaking it, and then getting in the dugout and turning and saluting me, that was one of the probably highest compliments that I received as a competitor from a competitor.
Well, that's the full range of emotions from a baseball player, the frustration, but then also the tip of the cap to the guy who did it.
Yeah.
Did you almost really retire in 70 or 71, or is that, again, one of those stories?
That was true. I was so frustrated, and between my military obligation and flying back and forth to New York, it seemed like all I did was live on an airplane, and then when I got an opportunity to pitch with my control, I just had regressed to the point that I was distraught about it that I just felt like it was time I do something else, that baseball wasn't, I wasn't meant to stay in baseball. And really, Ruth was the one that convinced me to stick it out through the season, and I think she saw more talent in me than I saw in myself.
Well, you certainly have mentioned her name quite a bit over the years. You talked about her being there, and if not for her, I mean, that's literally a moment where if not for her, who knows what happens.
Well, that's true. You know, you never know how decisions in your life are going to impact you and how they impact you the rest of your life. And so, you know, if I'd have made that decision, who knows what would have happened and what I would have done in my life. And, you know, I feel like that the reason I was able to play 27 years is because I have a great wife and a very supportive wife that enjoyed the sport, and we raised our children in the sport, and they came to love the game, and it reflects this day with their involvement in our AA minor league ball club.
And congratulations on that. I know you've branched out, and I guess it's you and your son. You actually own a team.
Right. It's both of my boys, Reed and Reese, are involved in it, and we have the Round Rock Express, which is the Astros AA. Just north of Austin here in the Texas League.
Nolan, is it tough when your last name is Ryan and, you know, you're a pitcher? And I know you actually, didn't you get a chance to pitch against your son?
Yes, when he was a freshman at University of Texas.
Mm-hmm. As a father, as proud as you are of his moments, is it also a little bit cringing, a cringing sensation perhaps when people want to make the comparison with the last name being what it is?
Well, I don't think it's fair to the children professional athletes' children to compare them to their fathers because, each and every one of them are different. And just because one of your parents have a talent doesn't mean that gene is passed on, and that automatically means that you're going to have that type of ability, mainly when it's a God-given talent that is unique and special. And so I think they were compared, and I don't think that was fair. I felt like that whatever my children wanted to pursue, as long as they were happy and enjoyed it, that I was supportive of that. So if they wanted to pitch, that was fine. If they didn't, that was fine too. So it was disappointing at times to hear comments and the way people reacted to them. But I think they handled it very well. And I found that it was much tougher being a parent sitting in the stands than it was to be a competitor on a major league level.
Last two things. Do you have any idea why you can throw as hard and why you could throw as hard as long as you did medically, psychologically? Is there anything that would let you believe that you know why you were able to do this?
No, my ability to throw was a gift. You know, it wasn't something I did, and I was blessed with the ability to do that. You know, you could go to kinesiologists and the medical fields, and they would tell you it was my fast twitch muscles and the strength of my core muscles and my torso and my leg drive and all that. And all those things are factors, but can you duplicate it? No, either people are blessed with that or they're not. The same as with speed, whether it be running. And so when someone has a gift like that, then the challenge is to try to maximize that, and what you try to do is develop the type of delivery and be in the best condition. And I think I stayed away from any career crippling injury that took away from my ability to throw, and then the aging process didn't affect me maybe as early as it did some other people, and that's probably genetics too, and then also probably through proper nutrition and basically just taking care of yourself. So there were a lot of factors that came together, and I was very fortunate, and I never lost my passion for the game and for competing. And I think a lot of people that I played with, they reached a point in their life that they were ready to do something else and just didn't have that drive. And I was very fortunate that I was able to maintain that.
If I give you a few days to go loosen up, how hard do you think you could throw today? And would it take a few days, or would it take a little bit longer than that?
Well,
I saw that commercial, by the way. I saw you knocking that can over.
Body that has trouble handling it, and I still throw on occasions. But, if I really dedicated myself to trying to get in the best shape I could possibly get in a six-week period and didn't have any kind of physical setbacks, how hard could I throw? I don't know. But the way my arm feels, I would think somewhere in the high 80s, probably. I don't know. That would be just a rough guess. And Nolan Ryan sitting here telling you that.
Now, you could still get major leaguers out then, is what you're telling me, after 6 weeks.
I don't know for how long.
But you could do it. I mean.
Well, that's one of the unusual thing about our sport is by the time you get the game figured out and know how to pitch and all the things that you have to do, then you're too old to do it.
Well, you defied it for a long time. The last thing, I look at everything on your resume. Honestly, is it disappointing that there weren't more World Series appearances, even getting one? I mean, you got a ring as early as 1969. When you say, well, I'm going to pitch until, well, heck, what year was it, 1993?
Yes.
You must have believed that there was going to be more World Series.
Well, after the 69 series, a goal of mine was to be in a starting rotation on a World Series team, and we got close with the Angels and twice with the Astros. Got within a couple of pitches of going to the World Series, but it never happened, and that shows how tough that is. Mm-hmm. And, And it was disappointing that I didn't get an opportunity on a personal basis to pitch in another World Series. But I feel very fortunate that I was on that Met team that experienced that, and I wouldn't trade anything for it. And so, you know, I encourage guys that I played with that when you get that opportunity, you need to cherish it.
Well, Mr. Ryan, I appreciate the time that you spent with us tonight. As I said, I know you don't do much of this, but greatly appreciate it. I know a lot of baseball fans are looking forward to, you know, talking to me about this after they actually hear it on the air. So I just wanted to thank you. I know things are going really well for you. You're a working ranching man. You just don't have land. You actually work your land.
Well, you know, I enjoy being outdoors. I enjoy the cattle business, and we have a beef business, so I'm very involved in it, and I enjoy that, and it's very rewarding to me. And it's a good time to visit because of the Ranger Atlanta mm-hmm. series going on, and I appreciate you giving me a call, and I enjoyed the visit.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Ryan. I saw your wife actually found a notebook. You were a man who knew what he wanted pretty early in life. You wrote 5 goals down, and you hit a bunch of them on the head, did you not?
I mean, well, you know, that was one of the things that I heard that you're supposed to do in early age is write down what your goals are, and it was kind of interesting 10 or 15 years later to go back and review that and see what you had accomplished and what in those days you thought were important.
Well, it's funny. I said it on the air just today, not knowing if we were going to do this. You know, I've always had, I hope, the utmost respect for military people, but I have a newfound respect. I just became a homeowner fairly recently. And I have a piece of land that's the size of a postage stamp. But when I actually tried doing something to it, turning some dirt and planting a few things and praying that it would grow, all I know is this. If my family relied on me for the food on the table tomorrow, we'd be in a whole lot of trouble and we'd be hungry.
Well, I think if they relied on you, you'd get a lot better at it.
Well, nice of you saying so, sir.
All right.
Nolan, thanks very much. Have a great night.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
George W. Bush hoping, like all of us are, that Nolan Ryan can get his 300th victory. The question is, will he complete it? And the answer has been given. Bobby Valentine out of the Ranger dugout, and that will do it for Nolan Ryan tonight. Arnsberg's pitch, fly ball, center field. This should do it. Pettis makes the catch, and Nolan Ryan and the Rangers are victorious. Nolan Ryan, his 300th career victory. And you can charge up the bus for Cooperstown. Nolan Ryan officially has had his ticket validated.
We went to clubhouse and went to the coach's room and did the scout report. He just told me, you put fingers down and I throw it, but you follow me and we're going to have a good game.
The Express has done it once again.
Stars at night are big and bright. Deep in the heart of Texas, the prairie sky is wide and high. Deep in the heart of Texas, the sage in bloom is like perfume. Deep in the heart of Texas, reminds me of the one I love. Deep in the heart of Texas.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, everybody. It's Andy and James here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do fun facts.
Yes, we do. James, give me a fact.
Did you know that there is an extinct bandicoot whose official scientific name is Crash Bandicoot?
Lovely. I didn't know that. Did you know, James, that Upper Egypt is technically below Lower Egypt?
Incredible. Absolutely amazing. I would love to hear more about that.
Well, all you have to do is go and listen to No Such Thing as a Fish.
Where will I find it?
Oh, all over.
Okay, bye.
Bye.